Welcome, everybody, from all around the world. Welcome to this podcast, Escaping the Entanglements of Our Lives. You got yours and I got mine. I'm your host. I'm Dolphus Q. I'm the originator and the creator of this podcast. Now, I believe our lives, all lives, yours and mine, are easily entangled with things that are real and things that are imaginary. And to our minds, there's no line of separation. It's said that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. It's also a terrible thing to lose. And many of us, because of these entanglements, are losing our minds. Now, I'm not here to judge. I got mine too. I'm only here to read and write my book. As I overcome one entanglement after another. But if you're following me, you know exactly what I'm doing. I believe escape is possible for us all, and it's easy. It's doing like Buddha and go sit under a yum-yum tree. But how are you dealing with the entanglements of your life? Don't let the stress and the mess destroy you. Always seek to save yourself. Take some time for yourself. Give your mind a rest. And I'm not talking about sleep. Sleep really don't count. But now, like the walrus said, the time has come. Yes, my friends all around the world, the time has come for the reading of the word. Chapter 16, episode 16, Fleeing Like a Fugitive. Son Bolo woke me up. He stood over me like a giant and nudged me with the toe of his shoe. My eyes opened, but I had to bat my eyelids several times before I made sense of my surroundings. It was still dark, and dawn was on the way. Only a glimmer of daylight hovered above the rough edge of the high hills, which still looked like silhouettes cut from black construction paper. The wind no longer whistled from the hills. There was a distinct cold chill in the air. The floodlights that lit the rest area had not been shut off yet. I saw plenty of parked vehicles and a few early bird travelers stirring about, mostly visits to the restroom, stops at vending machines, and to walk an assortment of dogs. I yawned up at him. "What's up?" "Get your stuff," he said quickly, but low, like a whisper. "Come on, let's go." There was an urgency in his voice. He had geared up and looked ready to roll. I responded with haste, but was nagged by a weird sensation that he had done something dreadful, something that I did not want to know. We heard it from the rest area, like Sun Bolo's intention was to be gone before the floodlights were turned on. I felt like we rushed to hide in a disappearing darkness. When we were back on I-10, Sun Bolo would repeatedly look back over his shoulder like he expected to see a ghost. The only things I saw behind us when I looked back was a convoy of big rigs. The trucks shot past us like bullets and seemed to shake the shoulder of the freeway under our feet. I commented above the noise about the speed at which the big rig rolled, as if Texas had no speed limits. And I equated what we witnessed as freedom. Freedom to speed. Sun Bolo reacted as if I had said nothing, then glanced back over his shoulder. I commented that in any other state, this area would be hot with speed traps and police cars. And my surprise to see so many speeders and no police cars out to stop them. Sun Bolo reacted as if I had screamed out, "Fire! Police car! What about police car? You see one?" He looked like he was ready to run for the hills. "No, no," I said quickly. "I didn't say I saw. I said I was surprised that I did not see one with as fast as these big rigs are rolling." Sun Bolo looked towards the sky. There were a few stars still visible. "Or it could be these truckers know something." He continued to stare and nod as if he accepted a final answer. "Yep. Could be this one horse town don't police this area. Its force is too small. Or those who do police this area are not on duty yet. Yep. I think these truckers know something." His words convinced his fears away, but not mine. He stopped looking back over his shoulder. He appeared as determined as ever. "We got a good jump on the sun. I want to make the most of it." By the time the morning sun had cleared the hills, the rest area was a faded memory behind us. Sun Bolo asked me if I remembered the name of the town where the Mexicans said we'd find a Sally. "Yeah, Curryville." The traffic had gradually changed proportions. There were now more cars and big rigs. We both spotted a police car on the eastbound lane of the freeway. The car could have quickly turned on its flashing blue lights and cut across the medium and come up behind us. Keep walking," urged Sun Bolo, "and don't look back." I obeyed the order, but any minute I expected the police car to drive up behind us. We saw two more police cars in the eastbound lane. We continued to walk as the sun climbed towards the high noon position. Eventually, miles ahead, I saw a Gulf Oil station sign. The sign looked like a huge lollipop on the top of a tall stem. Sun Bolo speeded up, and we walked faster. As we grew near to the sign, we saw that it was near a junction where I-10 bridged over a secondary highway. The two roads curved down from I-10 to the secondary road, a road to get on and a road to get off. There was a business establishment at each corner of the junction. The Gulf gas station faced a no-name two-pump station that looked like it had occupied that spot long before I-10 had been built. A 24-hour Waffle House stood across from a convenience store that looked at least a year old. Sunbolo looked very relieved as we started down the exit ramp. I thought we were headed to the store. Instead, he walked under the I-10 overpass. It was cool and shady underneath. The ground sloped up to the underbelly of I-10 and exposed the concrete beams that functioned like arch supports. The first beam rested on the edge, a ledge of dirt that was wide enough to stretch out upon and go to sleep. Sunbolo pointed up to the ledge. "I'm going up there. Go to the store and get us something to eat. You got any more food stamps?" I checked my pockets. I had a $5 food stamp and a few nickels and dimes and change. Sunbolo reached into his pocket, then handed me a $100 bill. "Here, bring me back a pack of cigarettes." I watched him climb up the slope to the ledge. I held the $100 bill in a tight fist. I refused to speculate upon how Sunbolo acquired it. I wanted to get rid of it as fast as I could. I walked towards the convenience store. I was halfway there when a police car drove past me and stopped in front of the Waffle House. My heart pounded like a synchronized hammer. I knew I had done no wrong, but I felt like running back to the ledge where Sunbolo lay. The police got out of the car and went inside the Waffle House. My heart continued to pound as I pounced towards the convenience store like it was a place of refuge. A young woman sat behind the counter reading a movie magazine. She got up as I entered. "Howdy," she said. "Is it hot enough for you?" I smiled slightly and told her it sure was. I sought something cold to drink and fast to eat. I took my purchases to the counter and handed the $100 bill to her. As soon as she recognized the bill, I saw something discouraging in her eyes. "Is this bill too large for you to handle?" I asked and waited, uncertain as to what I would do if it was. "Darn it," she said, "I'm afraid it is." She explained that she only had $100 in cash in the cash drawer. "If I make the sale, it will leave me without change for anyone else." I could not hide my disappointment. I nodded my head with acceptance and thought of the Waffle House. Then she sparked up like she had an idea. She picked up the phone and dialed a number. "Hi, Frank. It's Karen, over at the store. Can you change a $100 bill for me? 20s are fine. Can you bring it over?" "Great, thanks." She hung up the phone. "It'll be a few minutes, but if you want to go shop now, if you want to." As I shopped, I saw another police car parking at the Waffle House. I picked up a package of lunch meat, a loaf of bread, 2 bags of potato chips, 2 cans of sardines, and 2 liters of water. "Will there be anything else?" I passed her the $100 bill. "No. Yes, a pack of cigarettes." "What brand?" "A menthol brand. Coos." She reached for the cigarettes. They were in a wire rack above the cash register. The door opened and a policeman walked inside. He stood at the door for a moment and seemed to look me over. He came over to the counter and unbuttoned his shirt pocket. His eyes stared straight into mine. "You the one needed change for a $100 bill?" I pressed my lips together and nodded. I wanted to look away from his stare, but didn't dare. "Well, come on and give it to me. Karen said like she grew impatient. He looked away from me and smiled at Karen. I'd like to give you something else, too. I just bet you would. They both laughed. He handed her the 20s. She opened the cash drawer of the register. My purchases were less than $20. She counted out the change and gave it to me. She and Frank engaged in small talk while she bagged my purchases. Once they were bagged, I took the bag from the counter and started towards the door. She called me back. Hey, wait, your cigarettes. You forgot the cigarettes. I walked back to the counter. The cigarettes were next to the cash register. A book of matches rested on top of the pack. Thanks, I smiled. I completely forgot. You don't smoke cigarettes, do you? The policeman asked as I reached for the pack. Who are those for? I froze and my mouth dropped open with surprise. No, I don't smoke. These are for a friend. The policeman tapped at his temple with a finger. He smiled and blinked an eye at Karen, who laughed and shook her head in mock disbelief. Oh, there you go, being Sherlock Holmes again. My goodness, Karen, he said. I can't open my mouth without you thinking I'm trying to solve a crime. For goodness sakes, I'm a policeman. I'm trained to be observant. Well, what have you observed about me? That you play hard to get, the policeman smiled. I dropped the cigarettes into the bag and walked calmly to the door. The minute I was outside, I wanted to run, but I didn't want to be observed running. When I reached the overpass, I waited to be sure no traffic was coming before I started up the slope. I was relieved when I reached the ledge. You got the cigarettes? Were the first words I heard from Son Bolo. Cigarettes! I felt like shouting. Instead, I handed him the pack of cigarettes. We ate our meal in silence. When we finished, I packed the leftovers in my knapsack for later. Well, are you ready to start up? Son Bolo sucked his teeth. Nah, let's rest a while longer. I didn't like the idea, especially after my close encounter with the police. I expressed how I felt and related the incident that had happened in the store. You fool! He hissed like a snake. You shouldn't have told him that. Now they know there are two hitchhikers in the area. But I only told the truth. I didn't see any harm in that. No harm? Fool, this is Texas. Texas will fry your ass in the electric chair or else lock you up and throw away the key. For what? Hitchhiking? That's all we are doing. Son Bolo looked at me like a bull ready to charge. Just keep your mouth shut. You don't know nothing. And we never stopped at that rest area. My mouth dropped open, my eyes stretched wide. I saw horrible things. I backed away from Son Bolo. He leaned forward and gazed into my eyes. I could smell the salami on his breath. He hissed like steam escaping from a pressure cooker. Remember, we never stopped at that rest area, and you don't know nothing. And thus, we have reached the end of our episode. And I invite everyone from all around the world to engage us next time for escaping the entanglements of our lives. And until then, this is Dolphus Q saying so long, everybody.